So there needs to be some kind of a vision and commitment to the training of future leaders. Now, let's help us understand the plan for how that happens.
Well, God has always had a plan that families develop and train their own young people. Well, the church is a family, and the church is to develop and train its own future people and leaders. So God has always built into us reproduction. The Lord loves multiplication, not addition. He said at the beginning, fruitful and multiply. Mm-hmm. Well, we're to multiply and be fruitful. And I'll tell you a great story I read one time in U.S. News and World Report, a secular magazine. They gave an article on the family-owned business. Mm-hmm. And they listed all the advantages of the family-owned business. And by the way, worldwide, the family-owned business is a huge contributor to the world economy, more than you would ever realize. So they list all the advantages, all the good things about a family-owned business. But then they did the problems of a family-owned business. And I read this. One of the problems is the parents do not train their children in the next generation. And they don't trust them. And when I read that, I thought, oh, that's what happens in churches. We don't train the next generation in any kind of deliberate, serious, planned way. And we don't trust them. Yeah. They might change things.
Sure.
Well, actually, if they're good leaders, they are going to change things. As long as they don't tamper with the gospel and the basic teaching of the Word of God, we expect good leaders to face issues and problems and move the church forward. So we're in gospel business. Mm-hmm. We have a business. Every church is an extended family. Mm-hmm. So we have to be entrusting the gospel and all that we know of the New Testament to the next generation, or we will fail them. Mm-hmm. We fail ourselves.
Now, a phrase you've often used is, in terms of training future leaders, is be the man. Why don't you just elaborate on what you mean by that and how that relates to this?
Sort of a cutesy statement, but really what it means, if you look at 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 15 and 16, but in verse 15, Paul says, practice these things, talking to Timothy. Devote yourself to them. Then he says this, so that all may see your progress. I love that statement. He says, well, this church is in trouble, and Timothy is there to correct and restore this church. False teachers had destroyed this church nearly with its heretical teaching. And so Paul says to Timothy, a younger man, he says, now I want everyone in the church to see your spiritual progress. So I might say to you right now, does your wife, does your children, does your fellow colleagues, does the church see your progress, that you're a progressing Christian, you're a growing Christian? So here is the point, Dave, and it's a very important point. Leadership is influence. It's a very simple definition. How can you influence others if you're not growing? If you're not stretching, if you're not pressing yourself forward, if you're not gaining fresh knowledge and fresh vision and the Great Commission and seeing the world and the gospel going forward and addressing problems mm-hmm. in your church, if you're not reading, if you're not learning, if you're not listening to messages, well then, how can you influence other people? It's not even possible.
Yeah.
You can't change the hearts and minds of the next generation unless you're changing. So you've got to be excited about your faith. You need to be reading and studying and learning, pressing yourself forward, stretching your own mind, your own spirit, and then you'll stretch the minds of others. And I'll tell you, there is nothing more exciting for the people in the church than to see their leaders grow and watch them go forward and take the church forward, not the church dragging the leaders along, which so often happens. The leaders should be out in front, going someplace. Yeah. And the people say, wait, we better follow those people.
There's a great story from Robert Clinton in his article, Why So Many Christian Leaders Do Not End Their Life Well.
Yeah, this is a good statement.
And he says, we've observed that most people cease learning by the age 40. By that we mean they no longer actively pursue knowledge, understanding, and experience that will enhance their capacity to grow and contribute to others. Most simply rest on what they already know. But those who finish well maintain a positive learning attitude all their lives. Many people, particularly leaders, plateau, he says. They become satisfied with where they are and what they know. And this often occurs after they attain enough to be comfortable or can maintain a relatively secure and predictable future. One thing I've appreciated about you, Alex, is You've always had a thirst for reading and for knowledge and to discuss theology, I just will speak personally, that's been inspiring for me, is you are someone that I want to be like and follow. And we have other leaders, elders in our assembly that even when I came to Littleton Bible Chapel as a college student, me and my roommates said, we want to be like these guys. When we get older, we want to serve in the church. We want to love the church and treat our wives this way and raise our kids this way. And so I have sensed that and experienced that myself.
Well, I might want to say it's not just me. We've had a wonderful growing eldership that really wants to go forward and wants to learn and wants education and wants to press the church forward. Yeah. But I want to read a verse here from 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 16 of the Apostle Paul, probably a man now in his 60s. And he says this, so we do not lose heart, though the outer nature is wasting away. Now, if you're over 50, you know exactly what he means. The outer man is wasting away. You know, you have to get a knee replacement, a hip replacement, and you wear glasses, and some people lose their hair and all. You know, it's just, you're falling apart, you know. But he says this, the inner nature is being renewed day by day. Hmm. So this is a growing man. And this is, you know, the Christian life is a positive life of growth, of Christ's likeness, because that's the vision. Mm-hmm. We're to grow into Christ's likeness. Now, when you have achieved full Christ likeness, you can rest. Until that, you don't rest. You don't just sit in front of a TV set all day and plop yourself there, which is a great trap that many people have after a certain age. So he says, the inner man is every day being renewed. So I can't emphasize this enough, that as a Christian leader, as an elder in the church, you've got to be reading, you've got to be listening to messages, you've got to be interested, you've got to be feeding yourself all the time. As they say, you got to keep the gas tank full, or you run out of steam, or they say sharpen the saw, and any of those phrases. You've got to be a growing Christian, progressing, because if you're not, no one's going to follow you.
Let's get really practical here, and just talk about a strategy and a plan for training and developing future leaders. I know one area is just developing an eye for people and for potential. Why don't you just comment on that?
Well, I think there's many different plans, different books that will help you, but these are just some general ideas. First of all, I think as a shepherd, you're a shepherd of people, you have to have an eye for sheep. Now, I've never been a literal shepherd, but I've been around literal shepherds. And when I look at a flock of sheep, they all look exactly the same to me. But that would insult the shepherd. He would say, no, this one here is very rebellious and always gets in trouble. This one here is always sick. This one leads the pack. And so they're able to identify the sheep. Well, as a shepherd, you need to have an eye for people, an eye for sheep. And you need to always be looking. Who would be future? Where's potential? Who would be a future leader? And that's a very, very important thing, to have that eye. Now, I read this story about a young boy, and he was a sleepwalker. And so where we live is very cold in the winter. You could die out in the cold at night. And this boy, at 3:00 in the morning, in his pajamas, would leave the house and walk from house to house, knocking on doors, and then come back to his house. Now, he could have died out there, but he didn't. And this was reported in our newspaper. He's a sleepwalker. And when people would see him, he would see them but not see them, just go right past them. And I thought, you know, some of us as Christians, we're sleepwalkers. We go into church, we sit next to people, oh, hello, hello. We never actually see them. You ask later, who'd you sit next to? I don't know. Hmm. And we can be leaders and never really look at the people. We're just going past people. And can I expand that idea? You go to a gas station, you go to a grocery store, you have a postman, you have a UPS man, you have a garbage man, you have all these people crossing your path constantly, and we're not looking. We need to train ourselves to be, as Jesus said, capturers of men. He says, I'll teach you how to capture people. Well, one way to capture people is you've got to look. Mm-hmm. You've got to have interest and concern. So whenever you're with people, train yourself to look at them, show interest in them, draw them into you, remember them, get their name. So if you're going to be a shepherd, you have to have an eye for the people, and you've got to see there's potential in this person.
Have a vision for them. Why don't you share a little bit of your background. When you came to Littleton Bible Chapel 400 some odd years ago, Herb Banks was...
It didn't seem that long ago, but I guess... No.
Herb Banks was an elder here at the time, and I remember you sharing the story. He had a vision for you and said, there's a place for you here. Tell
yes,
about that.
I think I was here in the church about 3 months, and one of the main elders who started this church took me out to lunch, and he threw a vision for me, right in front of me, for this church. And he says, you know, we're looking for men like you. There's a place for you here. Why don't you stay here? I didn't know if I was going to stay here because I was actually a student at the time. Mm-hmm. And actually was going to go to the mission field. That's where I was heading. And the Lord turned a lot of events around, and I actually could not leave here. And so this brother was setting a vision, and he was saying, there is a place for you. Doors will open for you. We would like to work with you.
Yeah.
And here I am, just a young man, early 20s. And I think that's what we need to do, set a vision before these young men, young women. We need good women as well as good men. So we've got to be awake to this.
Yeah,
we have to be awake.
What about another practical application would just be developing relationships with some of these potential leaders? I know that's been something I've been the recipient of with you, is for the last decade or so, you've been really good about just saying, hey, I'm going to get lunch. You want to come with me? And we've shared a lot of life together. Why don't you, any
yes,
comments?
But I've had to pay most of the time.
I think you can pay
once in a while.
It's true.
When you start paying, then I know I'm in trouble.
Okay.
No, I saw you as were you a teenager or in your early 20s? I think you were a teenager when I first saw you, late teens. And I saw potential in him, and I saw some real exceptional gift, and I said, well, let's start a relationship. So it is building a relationship with those who you see. Again, we start with looking out there. I can imagine the Lord Jesus knew how to look at people. He could study people, read them. And I'm sure a lot of those disciples, when he first saw them, didn't look very good. But he saw what could happen in the years ahead. So you have to see that future and that potential. So anyway, I think that a very important thing is to build a relationship. You have some fun together. Maybe you take hikes together, or you go fishing together. You have meals together. You study together. You ask life questions. You call each other on the phone. You're sharing books, your articles, CDs. And so as you build this relationship, it's exactly what we had read earlier in the Gospel of Matthew, where Jesus said, come and be with me. And if you're with me, then I will send you out. So it's the whole thing of copying, modeling, whatever term you want to use. Mm-hmm. And it's the greatest teaching, because that's how we learn from our parents. Parents don't sit down and lecture us. We learn our language, we learn our values from watching our parents.
Yeah.
And whether we like it or not, so often we copy them in life.